Okay, let's just name it. Today is a weird day. We start with this joyful procession welcoming Jesus into Jerusalem, and yet by the end of the service, we're going to hear the story of his death. What took place over the course of a week is compressed into just a little more than an hour today. It's enough to give anyone whiplash. It would take on a different tone, though, if we were to live it in real time. What we skip over today, it lays the groundwork and offers a clear and distinct message. Jesus was truly a threat to everything that the Roman Empire held dear. He is countercultural in a way that would see an entirely different empire, the empire of God, ushered in. And while his entire life was leading up to this final confrontation in Jerusalem, John Dominic Crossan and Marcus Borg, two very influential historical Jesus scholars, remind us that on that first Palm Sunday, there are actually two processions entering Jerusalem. One was the procession that we just celebrated, Jesus' procession. It came in from the east and the Mount of Olives, and Jesus enters the city on a colt to cheers and accolades. People are so excited that they even laid their coats on the road for him. But make no mistake, this was a peasant procession. The branches were found. The coats that they laid on the colt and on the ground were likely picked up immediately because just like now, clothes were expensive. And even the donkey, even that was borrowed. This is a procession that was ushering in the empire of God. But then from the west, Pontius Pilate, the governor of Idumea, Judea, and Samaria, he entered the city in a very different procession, one of pomp and tremendous splendor. And it was meant to show exactly what was central to the Roman Empire: power and control. I just want you to try to imagine it. There would have been foot soldiers and cavalry on horseback, impressive armor, helmets, swords and other weapons, banners, and even golden eagles mounted on poles that would shine in the sunlight. You would have also heard the banging of drums, the stomping of feet, and the clinking of armor. It was a show of might. Pure and simple. And unlike Jesus' procession, Pilate's would have been intimidating, impressive, and probably at least a little bit terrifying to most people. But they were used to this type of imperial procession, especially around the Roman Empire and especially in occupied territory like Judea. Pilate and his predecessors would have always come to Jerusalem for major festivals. And Passover was no different. And why was Pilate there? He didn't live in Jerusalem. His residence was in the far more posh and coastal city of Caesarea Maritima. It was some 60 miles away. So was he there to celebrate Passover with his constituency? Absolutely not. As Borg and Crossan so aptly write, Roman officials were there not out of empathetic reverence for the religious devotion of their Jewish subjects, but to be in the city in case there was trouble. There often was. Especially at Passover, a festival that celebrated the Jewish people's liberation from an earlier empire. You can see how that might have some tensions flaring. In Jesus' procession, was intentionally opposing Pilate. Jesus' audience would not have missed his symbolism and what he was doing. His act of acquiring a colt was premeditated, and it was meant to demonstrate something very powerful. The prophet Zechariah described the promised king that will enter Jerusalem. He says this, "See, your king comes to you. Triumphant and victorious is he, humble and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." But then Zechariah goes on to describe what this king who came in riding on a donkey to Jerusalem will do. He will cut off the chariot from Ephraim and the war horse from Jerusalem, and the battle bow shall be cut off, and he shall command peace to the nations. His dominion shall be from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth. Unlike Pilate and the Roman Empire, Jesus is a king bringing peace and banishing war. Now, in the days that follow, Jesus only increases his insistence on bringing the empire of God into the world. Sunday, what we celebrate today, was Jesus' anti-imperial procession. And then tomorrow, on Monday, Jesus returns to the temple, and he drives out the money changers, the agents of Rome, from the house of God. Tuesday, Jesus confronts the religious authorities in the temple. And these certain religious authorities were in collusion with Rome, and they were seen as taking advantage of faithful Jewish people. And on Wednesday, Judas Iscariot agrees to betray Jesus and starts to look for an opportunity. Thursday is the Last Supper and the beginning of the end. And Friday, Jesus dies. Jesus and the cross are the antithesis of the power-hungry empire. The cross and that empire will always be at odds, because the cross is Jesus' throne is based on love. And the empire has no place for love. Wars have never been fought because of love. Currency is not printed to show love. Nationalism is a perversion of love. Now let's be clear about one thing. Jesus was guilty on the cross for what they killed him for. Jesus was guilty of sedition, of preaching a brand new society, one that exists out of love and is necessarily counter to the empire. Jesus committed treason, and the powers that be crushed him. They crushed him so that his infectious idea that love and not power are the be-all and end-all would be stamped out. Each year, when we join in the procession and we shout our hosannas, we are in solidarity with our Savior, who laid it all on the line for an empire that shunned power and control and instead blessed peace, equity, and love. Every time we join this procession, we are joining Jesus in treasonous acts that say to the world, we pledge allegiance solely to the empire of God and to no other. Are you ready for that?